The following podcast is an Azua audio production.
Hi, potties. Welcome back to the Smart Money Tribe podcast. Thank you so much to all of you who listened to the last episode about how the economic policies affect our personal finances. I know it was a little bit tough conversation to listen to, but I'm glad you listened anyway. This week, we switch gears a little bit and talk about something a little bit fun. The business of music. I've always been so fascinated with the business behind the entertainment industry, the business behind Afrobeats, because it's wild that when we were growing up, there was actually a time that as a country, we didn't really rate our own music. We'd rather listen to foreign music on, you know, the radio than our own. But now that has changed immensely. Our songs are, you know, more on the radio than ever before. Afrobeats is one of the biggest cultural exports that we have as a country. The thing that sells us the most is our biggest soft power, because it's so culturally relevant and it's changing the sound of a lot of things. And one of the things that blows my mind is how we went from thinking if you wanted to be a musician then you are going to be poor because there's no money in it, to having artists like Davido selling out concerts of over 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 people. Wild. So to just see how it's grown is amazing. So I wanted to talk to someone who could speak on the deal making, the behind the scenes, the planning the tours, and who better to speak to than Asa Asika, who is arguably one of the most successful talent managers in Africa because he manages Davido. I'm such a huge fan and I loved having this conversation because it gave us so much insight to the brilliance that goes into, you know, making all of this happen.
Asa Asika is arguably the most successful talent manager out of Africa. He's best known as Davido's manager, but he's also the co-founder of The Plug Entertainment, The Plug Music, The Plug Sport, The Mainland Block Party, and the hottest new club that starts at 2 a.m. in Lagos, Hotbox. With an impressive roster of artists like Davido, CK, Focalistic, Bella Schmurda, Victoni, it's easy to forget that Asa started his career in entertainment when he was just 16 years old. It's even more impressive when you look at the music infrastructure and ecosystem that he has built with his friends Bizzle and Toby. We've seen some of the artists that they manage go from club tours to selling out the O2 Arena in London. In this episode, we talk about the business of music, deal making, planning a global tour.
I hope you enjoy this episode. Let me know in the comments.
Asa Asika. I'm so excited about this interview because I'm such a fangirl, as you know. I've always been so fascinated by the business side of music and just watching you as a young, ambitious boy just go for it over the years has been so inspiring to watch. So you're arguably one of the most successful talent managers in Africa. You manage Davido. How did that journey start?
I was born into a family that already had hands in entertainment and I just got dragged in. I won't say dragged in, I got sucked in, yeah.
So yeah. You were working for
Obi Asika? Yeah, I used to work with my uncle. I used to work with my uncle and my cousin Nato and a few other people, and from doing little tiny things, grew and we're here today.
So how did you and David meet?
Mutual friends. So we both knew about each other and everything, but we just weren't friends. Like, we'd see each other and be like, how far? But we never really spoke. And then a certain day, he just sent me a message, like, I want to talk to you about something. We had a few conversations, and
we're here today.
So basically, he was like, I want to do this music thing, and I feel like you're the person that can help like, do it.
Yeah.
What do you feel like he saw? Because you weren't managing, you're working in entertainment, but you weren't managing anyone, per se, were you?
No.
So what do you feel like he saw that made him think, okay, Asa is the guy that's going to help me break into it?
I think at that point in time is one of the things Levi and I have in common that has probably like kept us going to today is we both believe in like taking risks. Like you can tell David and I this thing, if you do it, you're going to die and we'll still do it. We've done it many times. So I think it was, this is the guy I have the most access to and he works in his space and he's a young guy too and he seems to be thriving on what he's doing. So let me have a conversation. And obviously at that point in time, I hadn't like worked like full time as anyone's manager, but I had been around people and learned the basic ropes. So I knew what we needed to start.
Fantastic. Yeah. So David sees you and knows this is my guy that can give me the connections into this entertainment industry and all of that, right? But what do you see in David that makes you realize that this is a star? Because that's a big thing to sort of like commit your career to someone's, you know, talent without really knowing for sure that they're going to be successful.
So I say all the time to people, I'm like, I'm very, very picky about talents I work with. Because if I actually don't believe in the artist or like the talent or like their crafts, it's just not gonna work. Because I need to wake up excited every day saying, yeah. Like the artists that we've worked with, because obviously since David, I've worked with numerous artists and still work with other artists. And it's been, and the beautiful thing about like, because obviously now, I've grown my business. We have a whole company called The Plug where we manage multiple people like CK, Victoria, Balashmada, obviously David, and a few other people. And we're able to say yes and no to people because we found a formula that works for us. Like there are artists, like if I say the artist's name now, people will be shocked. But there's a certain artist we worked with, we don't work with him anymore. We worked with him for years. And when Bizzle first played music to me, I was like, nah. And then 2 years later, like him and Bizzle have gone through like the whole artist development thing, going to producers, and literally Bizzle sends me a complete EP and he's like, listen to this. And from that day, like even the artist always says, he was like, I know that they started believing in me. Like it was very obvious. So, and that's why one of the things I've learned is partnerships. It's like David and I, like a thing of, I don't know how to do this, so, but let's bring somebody else. Or like people are too busy worrying about what people will say than actually just getting to results. Like for me, I say to people all the time, bro, I'll ask a million questions if I have to. Like all this acting like you know what you're doing and then just end up doing nonsense doesn't make sense to me at all.
I just honestly think that in Nigeria, especially to be an entrepreneur, you have to put your learning cap on. You have to be ready to ask questions. Yeah. You have to be ready to be a learner and not be doing oga.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, I say to people all the time, every business that I have hands in today, apart from music, I had no guidance. I was literally starting afresh, taking a risk. And even with this whole music thing is, as much as I had Uncle Obi and Tola and each of them to guide me, the music has not gotten to a level where that they didn't even get to in their time. So I'm still learning on the job every day. Like when I'm walking to certain rooms, having certain conversations with people, I don't really have access to people that have been in those rooms to call them. Like I'm meeting these people and learning on it. Yeah. I remember like the first time we had to actually start doing paperwork for music. And I was like, I don't understand. But as time went by and everything, and I realized, okay, like this is actually a business. Like the people, the other people involved in the music, they have to make money and stuff. Because I remember the first David album, when we were putting it together, it was literally David and I doing everything. We had support from family and friends here and there, but who knew about signing an agreement with a producer? It was literally, guy, how much do you charge? Okay, you take 500K, we only have 300K, give me the data. It wasn't, and it's the, to see everything evolve to where it is now, just is like, obviously, everyone's happy about it, but it just goes to show that like consistency, hard work, and actually working smart will get you into places you thought you'd never be able to get into.
It's interesting because I honestly think it's more than that. And well, even
more than that.
Even with you coming on this podcast, I was thinking about it and I was like, I feel like the people who are really successful, especially in the most unlikely things, always have a strong conviction within them that they are going to be somebody, like they are going to be like successful, because you almost had to have a stubbornness about you too. Because it's wild now. We're in a time where a young person could literally be like, oh yeah, I'm a talent manager for like a big superstar, you know, across the world, and it wouldn't be a big deal. But if we're really being realistic, at the time you were coming up, it was insane. It's like, stay in school, kids. Like, why are you like, this is not a career. Like, music wasn't something that, that people did for money. It was almost like you weren't serious. Yeah. And it's interesting that you're Nato's cousin, because I remember Nato being like the first of one of us that, like, basically, I'm an MSc. I'm an MC with an MSc. Like, it was so wild, like, to explain to people's parents that you went to school, you got this, you know, fancy education, and then you want to be a rapper. Yeah. So I can imagine that being your cousin, and then you're then now saying, okay, me, I'm not going to be an artist. I want to manage, you know, the artist, and this is my job.
Yeah.
Were there people, even if you had people in your family who were in music and whatever, were there people who sort of like tried to discourage you from it or say, you know?
Yeah, even it too. Yeah, of course. So one thing I've learned about, I mean, and everybody should know this, but I guess experiences teach you better. Like, everyone's story is different. Everyone's path is different. People always feel as if like you have to go a certain way to get certain goals. And without being condescending or like trying to sound like cocky, like, I have friends who have gone to school and have PhDs now who work in 9 to 5 and are making peanuts. I'm like, okay, dude, okay, let's say at that point in time when everybody's like, oh, go to uni, stay in uni, do this, do that. I'm like, dude, one of my companies pays 45 people salaries a month, and that's only one of the businesses I run. So I'm like, dude, if I do the math, I probably pay about 100 salaries a month. And I have no degree. So it's not about, following the rules and stuff. Like, rules are pretty much made to be broken. It's now you being smart about, when you take these risks, it's about you being smart. Like, there are basic skills you learn in school. Like, there are basic skills that obviously I learned in school that I use till today. Yeah. There's some things that they did not teach me in school. And it's just like balancing everything out and being able to be honest with yourself and be like, okay, I'm good at this, I'm not good at this. Like, when Bizzle and I merged our companies to form The Plug, the major reason why it was even an idea was one of our big bros was like, guy, every time I come to Nigeria and I need to do stuff, I hire the two of you separately. Why don't you guys just literally? I'll never forget. Bizzle and I used to go to New York every summer from like 2014, and it was 2016 summer. We're literally sitting in his office, and I was like, why don't you guys just merge your company together and call it The Plug? And two of us looked at each other, and I was like, this is actually damn smart idea. And we came back like a month later, registered the company, started doing everything together. And even with Bizzle and I as partners, like, we're in 2023 now. Mm-hmm. Damn. So Plug's going to be 7 this year. And we've added a third partner. And our third partner, Toby, brings a different dimension to everything. Because it's like, for example, like, there's situations where, like, Toby and I are fighting Bizzle. Because we're like, why do you do this like this? Or there are times when Toby and Bizzle are fighting me. But then there's always a common goal. There's always, but you're responsible for this. It's like, for example,
like, it's not personal.
It's just for like the growth of the business, it's, and stuff.
Understanding that we all have the same vision.
Of course.
So let's get to the money. It's one thing for you to be able to spot the talent. It's another thing for you to be able to monetize it and then scale. So at what point did you realize that, you know what, there's really money here? Like, when did you guys make your first like real money?
First, so the thing is, and this is, I feel like this is why Dave was interested in working with me, because before I started managing Dave, I used to do club nights. Mm. So I was already in the club scene, I don't like club gigs and club tours and stuff like Banky and Sid and Nito and Co already. So I had like that club scene unlocked to an extent. So when David had his first single, I was already doing like club shows and then little things. I remember then, I can't say the brand now, but there was a certain brand Nito had a partnership with and they used to pay David to perform also. And I think it was like 100K. And we used to have to get money after the show. So if the show was on Friday or Monday morning, I'd be in the office in Ikoyi waiting for a check for 100K. And obviously 100K, even then 100K wasn't crazy, but just the fact that you're like, okay, this is my money,
yeah,
was something. And if a brand of that level is willing to pay you 100K consistently, you know that, okay, yeah, you're creating a demand. Yeah. So, and I would say, I feel like music is simple economics, it's demand and supply. Like, once you've gone the music to a certain level and the music is of a certain level, people will come looking for you, yeah.
That's amazing. So, you get to work with, like, some of the biggest brands, like, that, you know, play in this market because you are basically managing like one of the biggest superstars that controls culture. Like, I mean, Davido says Ichoke and it becomes a catchphrase that is part of our social fabric, right? Yeah. And that's a powerful thing to be able to sell, yep. Because you can undeniably say we have the eyeballs, right? So how do you approach like working with brands? Do you choose them or do they choose you?
It's a bit of both because, okay, there's this really cool campaign that we shot, bro, that's crazy. We shot for a brand with CK last year in like early December, you know, and the campaign is not even out yet. And we're one of those kind of things where I just got an email saying, oh, we're doing this campaign and we think CK is perfect for it. We have four other people. And I was like, who are the other four people? And I didn't even know who two other people were. I had to Google them and everything. And I was like, okay, this is actually sick. Called CK, I was like, yo, I think this is mad. There wasn't a lot of back and forth on it. Boom. And it was done. The campaign, hopefully should launch. I don't even know for those guys. They've paid scenes and everything. And it should launch soon. And it is a very big deal. Or we just did a campus tour, a university tour with CK around Nigeria. And HP had reached out to us. They wanted to hire CK to do some certain things for them. And then we were like, wait, you know what? How about you come on board and do this? So basically, like, we ended up, like, steering them in a different way and saying, for the results you want, how about you go like this, yeah, this, there's that. And then I've had scenarios where, brand, I'm trying to think of an interesting one. With brand, people always look at David's Mattel deal as like the case study,
but it's not his biggest deal.
I guess that people don't want people to know it's the biggest deal, but like Mattel, for example, the way the Mattel deal came about was very funny. So I literally was walking out of a building and some people I know that work in Panericard, I was like, yo, what's up now? We should talk. That I really want to get David tied into an alcohol brand, like, let's talk. We had like a very short conversation. And they're like, okay, we'll get back to you. Didn't hear back from them for like 2 months. And one day I get a call, like, yo, are you free today? Can you come into the office for a little bit? And I was like, sure. Went in, had like a 20-minute conversation, explained where we were at, what we were trying to do. I was like, okay, is this aligned for you? Then I get an email saying, okay, we're interested, we want to take this to the next level. So I'm like, okay, perfect. Looping our whole team. And we start going back and forth. And it turned into like a huge, that deal was pretty much, I'm not sure if you watch football, but it was like a deadline day. It was like, okay, this is what it is. This is how much we had, what we want to do. You have to sign today. And be like, no, we want this. We went back. I remember the deal, we eventually signed it at like 9 p.m. because the office is around the corner from David's lawyer, Bobo's office. So literally me and him were sitting in his office, going back and forth on email. People are like 500 meters from us. And then we get to the middle point. And we're like, okay, you know what? Just come to the office, we're right here. And they're like, okay, if we send this email, You have to sign. And we were like, no problem. And we did the deal, and definitely, we just renewed with them. And I guess on both parties, like, it's a symbiotic relationship. Both parties gained. Everyone's happy. They're one of the brands we've worked with that I would continue to work with over and over. Like, and even outside David, like, I know how much the plug has gained from the relationship with Pernod, how much they've gained from working with us. So for me, like, with this whole entertainment thing, how we're talking about business, my major thing I always say to people is I'm trying to build my little ecosystem of my own where you just can't avoid me. So whether it's from talent management that we do, or the creative agency side, we do things, or the booking side, or how Plug does music distribution and publishing, or recording at one of the Plug studios, or what else do we do that I haven't said, or events, or going to a club, because obviously I also own a club called Hotbox, so it's just, and then Plug also does sports. So I'm like, guy, my dream is that between me and a few of my guys, we can pretty much build something from ground up and not necessarily need to go outside our circle.
Sure, and I love that so much because me, I'm so big on collaborating to compete.
Hell yeah.
But before we even go into that, because I feel like there's a whole conversation here about you working with your friends. I'm interested in something. Like, so most talent managers fail because they have one client, and then no matter how successful, like, the client, you know, becomes, I remember, what's this guy's name, Troy, Eve's manager, like, telling a story about how, like, they got so big together, and then that was, like, his main, you know, person, and then one day she just comes and is like, actually, I'm moving on to a bigger, you know, sort of, like, agency. But then you have, like, the, I was going to say White, but I don't know whether that has anything to do with it. But like Mike Ovitz, like he, you hear about how he basically went from, yes, managing talent, but thinking ahead and like packaging them for deals and saying, you know what, let's put this and this and this and this together and then take it to the money or take it to the brands and as a package deal. So he was no longer doing just 10%, 15%. He was thinking about, you know, ownership in IP and things like that. And it sounds like that is, you know, the kind of thinking that you basically like employ. So do you start the year thinking, you know what, yes, there are going to be things that are low-hanging fruits that will come to me. But do you start the year thinking, you know what, these are the things I want to do? And these are the people I'm going to pitch it to?
So, for example, like, there are people on our roster that we don't do, like, full-time management for. We do certain things for them. Like, perfect example is, like, SARS. So, we work with SARS on a level of, like brand management and events. So, so for example, I'm not sure when this comes out, right? Yeah. But there's some stuff we're working on that is tied to like building certain things out. And it's pretty dope because, for example, with Saz was first my friend. Like, Saz and I have been friends for years. And then Toby comes on there and is like, yo, I think we should do this with Saz. And I was like, I think this would be mad easy because he's actually my guy. So that whole thing of being able to build with your friends, like, I would never trade that. I have some dumbass friends, but I have some friends who have been able to,
like, let's make money together. Yeah, it's sweeter when we're all at the top.
So, for example, in August, me and my friends were all going on holiday, a group of us, and it's definitely the most expensive holiday I've ever been on. And it's like, okay, we've been making money together, we've been doing these things together, let's go and enjoy it together. And it's just a nice feeling knowing that everybody here is on a certain level, everybody's doing stuff. It just makes it easier. And then even on those trips, we're able to sit down and talk and be like, okay, what are we doing next together? There's so many other business, between like some of my guys, I probably registering a new company every like 6 months with some idea we have or this and that. And I feel that's the way it's meant to be. Like, why do I have to go and start meeting some guy who I don't know, when I know my guy can do the exact same thing? Stuff like that. I feel,
you know, because a lot of business and building is about trust and loyalty.
Exactly.
And if you can build with people that you that are loyal to you and share the same vision, as in that is the most beautiful.
It's the easy, and because it's easier, like you have peace of mind because you know that this guy is going to a room doing things a certain way. You know, like your ideas are not being misrepresented. Because the thing is, a lot of like talent managers aren't able to. I always say to people, I feel like the most important thing, like one of the most important like traits you have to have as a talent manager, is being able to like stay like level-headed through like the good times. And I'm a perfect example of this. I'm like, dude, when I was 19, 20, and we were making like 1M, 2M a week, nobody can talk to me. And I feel as if I had to go through that process to be able to be where I am today. But I would say to you, like younger guys, because there's like a group of talent managers, the younger guys who I talk to all the time, like Thames's manager, Muiwa, we speak all the time. Mayor's manager, Sam, everybody knows that's like my son. Like, and I'm really big on legacy and like putting other people on and people being able to say that, oh yeah, this guy helped me. I'm just feeling comfortable to be like, yo, Issa, I'm stuck here. What do you think about this? But my generation don't really do that. Everyone is always trying to form. Mm. And at the end of the day, like, I don't really give a damn. If I'm going to be cool with 25-year-olds, I'm cool with it.
I think it's a very powerful thing because the thing is, especially in Africa, music, movie, entertainment, we're doing things now, like on a global scale, but we're still on the cusp of something. We're still building. And I feel like the more people you help to build within that ecosystem, the better for you and everyone, you know, long term. Because what we're lacking right now is structures.
That's like the biggest thing.
We don't have the capacity to be able to mine the talent and raw sort of like creativity.
No, but that's but that's the thing I always say to people. I'm like, but that's the essence of partnerships. Mm. Because Africa as a whole is in demand. And the same way the dream for a lot of African people is to be relevant abroad, I'm like, dude, this thing is a symbiotic thing. It's like, you rub my back, I rub your back. Mm-hmm. There are things that I can't do that present people have partnerships, like unspoken partnerships where like, I know if my friend who is a successful talent manager in Atlanta needs something in Nigeria, he's going to call me. Mm-hmm. And the same way if I need help with something, I'll be like, yo, I'm trying to do this. That's the only way you're going to get into those rooms to be able to learn all this stuff, to be able to do these things. When, for example, songs like Fall and If, or even back in the day, like when IOJ's Your Number was doing well on Radio New York, I'd never had a song that was played on New York radio before. I had no idea what to do. Of course, I was going to ask questions. And who am I going to, at that point in time, like, there wasn't really anybody I could call and be like, yo, what do you do when a song starts picking up in New York? Mm-hmm. But then for me, it's the kind of thing where like it's the duty of me, I'm not going to call names, but other talent managers to like be like, oh yeah, come. I want Thames, Lojay, CKLU, come. These are the mistakes we made. This is what we did. Perfect example I always like to use is like, we've been working with CK for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And when I met CK, CK already has a manager. And the first thing I said to him was like, listen, I'm not trying to come here and get rid of, and I think all of this in front of him. I'm like, because I've been in that position where
someone
is trying to come and take your, and I was like, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to make the pot bigger.
That's a big thing.
I know, but
is a big thing. Like not trying to fight for turf, trying to figure out, how do I create an opportunity that all of us can?
Because if you think about it, the more people working for somebody, the more people working for somebody, the more probability there's for success. The more probability that more deals can come in. The more probability that there are more opportunities. So instead of you having that one person who, at that point in time, has a certain level of exposure to do everything for you, how about you're working with someone who already has the exposure and is willing to equip the person coming behind him to do what he's doing? That's the way I look at it. And it's the same model we've pretty much built with almost everyone on our roster. Like, it's a thing with us as a program. Like, we're like, when we're taking new talent on, let's take the new talent on with their guys, with their team. Mm. It makes everyone's life easier because at the end of the day, you know that people are with him So far, they're not useless. Already there for, because they believe in something. And it's more, because things, a lot of people, you have to remember that a lot of people who work in, not a lot of people, like pretty much everybody, they're learning on the job. They haven't been to any school for to learn how to do all these things. In the grand scheme of things, they're really, really, really like a university course for talent management. So
you just basically have to figure it out and
so,
learn.
Yeah, so it makes stuff easier. Like three examples, like Victoni, CK, and Bella, they have their day-to-day, everyday teams. I'm on calls, I'm in WhatsApp groups, I'm picking up my phone, talking to his manager, being like, okay, Daffy, I think we should do this for Vic. What do you think about this? The fact that I don't have to be traveling with him allows me more time to actually sit behind my computer and get on calls. Because the only truth about it is, look at it this way. An artist blows up, you sign to like a booking agency. Whether you're, so let's look at it this way, yeah? Let's say there's Burna Boy, Wizkid, Davido, T.Y. Savage, Olami, like five huge artists are now signed to all these international booking agents. Do you think some of the shows we've gotten have not been from a thing of like those booking agents being called because, oh, you guys represent A$AP Rocky or you represent Rihanna? And they'll be like, oh yeah, we have Rihanna, but we also have boom. And people like, that's the way it works. So anybody who wants to sit down and tell you that, no, I didn't get it, is just actually delusional, because it is what it is. Unless you're like on the highest of levels.
But let's even talk about playing at this level, like being a global success, like, you know, David or even CK. Let's talk about the Timeless tour.
Yeah.
It's been blowing my mind, like, since it came out. I was listening to that album over and over again. But more importantly, I kept thinking about, like, the business side of it. Like, what does something like that cost in terms of putting a tour together, putting the promo together? Like, what does that look like? What does the planning look like? What does the monetization look like?
You know, with like putting together like all these plans, it all depends on like the size of the artist, what kind of artist he is, what kind of music you're marketing. Because if you look at it, they're like, I probably, if we're looking at it on a basic playing field, I probably don't have to spend the money I'll spend on a Victoria campaign or a CK campaign for David, because David is bigger. But then there's certain things that I would do for David that I don't need to do for CK. So for example, let me give you a perfect example of this, like TikTok. Well, from a generation that's just above TikTok. So I had to learn, like, for example, when Love Quantity was going crazy on TikTok, I literally called, and this is an example, I literally called Favour and I was like, Omo, this TikTok thing, oh yeah, please come and start explaining it to me. And as I started getting into it, and that's life, you just adapt to like trends. So, like putting together like the Timeless marketing campaign first, bro, I don't know how many times we changed the ideas. Timeless wasn't even the album name at one point. We all went back to the drawing board. Someone in the team came up with a name and I was like, listen, if this thing comes from me, I don't think David is going to answer that. Come and talk to David about it and I'll back you up. And because I was like, yo, this is a mad dope idea, but I feel as if he's just in a place where, like, I just want my album to come out. So if it's coming from me, it's going to be like, it's like I delay my album again. So I'm like, yo, you come, talk about it, we'll back you up. It's even with, for example, Bobo. Bobo is David's lawyer and business manager. We know how we pick and choose how we argue with David about certain things just to get the end results.
But so, okay, so let's do it like this, because I know you don't want to go into specifics of your Timeless tour. Let's say you had $1 million to push an artist. An artist,
as far as
like,
music is good, as far as music is good, you're good for that.
How would you spend it? Like, what part of that goes to the tour? What part of that goes to marketing? What part of that goes to even like creating the album?
Yeah, so that's the thing, like, depending on the kind of music you make, because there's some artists, depending on the kind of music they make, I might not even put any of that one into like live yet. I might spend that money on creating the album, marketing it digitally and physically, stuff like radio, and not even bother with anything live yet. But there's, because the thing is, every artist's like piece is different. Like there's some artists that you book them because you know they're good performers. Mm-hmm. They might not have the maddest songs, but the way they perform the songs, it will chop you doo-doo. There's some guys that they have the maddest songs in the world, but when you see them live, that's like, why did I even come here? So it all really depends. A good chunk of that money, no matter what, would go to creating the music and marketing the music. With like live, the ways you can go about, I think about live is that if you created a certain amount of demand, it will in some essence, not completely, it will reduce your cost because then you can now go into rooms with like a Live Nation and be like, yeah, listen, we want to do this.
And we can bring this amount of people.
And we're like, we think, because at the end of the day, like everybody works with like data. If you have a song that has 10 million streams and you go on your back end and see that 700,000 of those streams are from New York and you go to Live Nation and be like, listen, I want to do my first headline show. I want to do a 1,500 capacity venue. You have 700,000 streams from New York. So it's like, oh, no brainer, let's do it. But then if you're walking into a room saying, ah, I have 200 million, I'm the biggest thing from Nigeria, but then your streams are illegal streams. Everybody's going to be like, okay, I've asked my friend in Nigeria, apparently you are the shit, but how am I going to convince anyone that I should invest money in you? And that's because that's one of the things that happens with Afrobeats a lot of times. Like someone will come and say, oh, I think this artist should perform in this venue or camp or should be performing here. And I'm like, guy, 6 years ago, this guy came and performed here. But at that point in time, Afrobeats wasn't big. There wasn't any structure to it. So there's no history. There's no sacred history. So everyone is not like, oh, yeah, I heard that he's huge in Nigeria or this. But I'm like, he sold no tickets in London. But then meanwhile, he comes to London like 6 years ago when he was Nottingham and all those, doing all the shows in Nottingham and Birmingham and all those things, and you've done like 1K, 2K, but you didn't go about it in the right way, so there's nothing
so there's
to prove
no data
it, yeah.
To sell it.
Yeah.
So, for me, I don't know, my own big message right now is that we need to be focusing on our soft power.
Yes, for sure.
Because I feel like Nigerians, especially like we're the new colonizers, everybody wants like our music, our food, our movies, like we're so sexy to the world right now. Yeah. But the thing is also, how are we monetizing, you know, that global success, and how are we creating sort of like pathways and structures to make sure that this is a sustainable thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just like a fluke that, you know, David, Burna, Wizkid would be, Tems would be big right now, but like in a few years is like done, right?
Yeah.
So what are we doing in terms of like creating legacy that makes sure that we're not just, you know, being creative for being creative's sake, but then we're monetizing in a way that also creates like a pipeline for other,
So, for example, gatekeeping. Not even Nigerians. Black people, we love to do this play of like, I'll ask you, oh, where did you cut your hair? Be like, oh, one guy like that. But then I'm like, dude, why can't we all look fresh?
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, where like, I go from point A to B like this. Letting other people know, okay, don't do it like this, do it like this. Us creating our own assets. Like, for example, there's something we're doing. We're meant to do it last year, but we had to postpone it. We're doing it this year. We're launching a festival called the Away Festival in Atlanta. It's David's festival.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea and concept of it is to bring like the next batch of guys who we think are going to be big next year and expose them. So it's like, when you guys start hearing something, you'll be like, oh, this guy, remember him from this? Or like, you start following him from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, that's the only way we're going to grow our culture. Like things like Afro Nation, Afro Tribe, I know how much those things have impacted the way people look at Afrobeats. Like Afro Nation Miami was last week, and David didn't even perform at it. Unavailable Today is like number 41 on the Shazam charts in Miami from his DJ playing it and people doing the dance. That just goes to show you how influential
he is.
The festival is, and a gathering of Africans anywhere in the world. Because we have to remember that one of the things that has made Afrobeat so big is that, first of all, there are Nigerians everywhere. And where there are minimal Nigerians, there's another kind of African there.
So
and we're so proud of our culture. Like, we're so, we've always, even before it was cool to be African or before it was cool to be Nigerian, we're always like the most proud in the room, and we're always the ones who would basically teach our other African friends or our little white friends, like, you know, about our like culture, our music and whatever. And I think that is such a big, big thing to be able to do. Like, it's a huge like power, like, you know, to have, like, to be able to sort of like control.
Yeah, it's important, because if we don't, our story will be told for us by people that don't know anything about our story. Like, that's why it's important, where like ownership, putting each other on, collaboration. Like, another thing, like collaborations, like, look at like Latin music. Latin music, you can wake up one morning and let's say Nicki Jam. Nicki Jam, one of the biggest artists from there, will drop a song and it'll be featuring J Balvin, Farruko, Raul Alejandro. That's literally like Olamide waking up and dropping a song featuring David Wizkid and Burna Boy.
Yeah.
It can never happen with us.
Because
everyone is always forming, I'm bigger than you, or ego. But I don't know, those are the things that are going to open doors. Like,
when we collaborate to compete, because we're bigger together or we're stronger together.
Yeah. Afrobeat is like at a place where people are more interested in, you know, there's a point in Afrobeat where it's like you have to have like an American artist on your album.
Mm.
It's not at that anymore. Like, the American people want to know what's popping here. Like, look at, for example, David's most successful album has no American features. It's just like, I feel like the impact of like a Davido and Wizkid song globally today, it would be more impactful. Obviously, you have a huge impact. Yeah.
Featuring an American
artist. Trust me, a Davido and Cardi B song or a Wizkid and Lil Baby song cannot be bigger than a Davido and Wizkid song. It's the honest truth. Like, there's no stadium, there's no arena that they cannot sell out together.
An album, not even a song. Like, an album will be even more.
Like, not even an album is even like going far. Like, I'm telling you, like, one, like, things like that. Like, and this is, even like, just imagine these guys coming together and announcing that, yo, we're going on tour. We're going on a worldwide tour and we're doing 60 shows. That will literally be like some Renaissance, Watch the Throne level. Because at the end of the day, this is literally like the Jay-Z and Kanye of our own place. So it's just like us.
Make it happen, Issa.
You never know.
Make it happen.
It's just.
Make it happen.
Yeah. Because the thing is, we focus so much on like being like, oh my God, Jay-Z. Like, I'm like, dude, you technically are your own Jay-Z.
Yep.
That kind of thing. So
what do you see as the future? What do you see as the future for the business of music in Africa?
Ownership, less foreign people coming and like infiltrating. Like, obviously, foreigners have to come in for it to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But like, less situations where they're like owning stuff they don't need to own, or owning stuff that they have no idea how to use. The originators and the people who are actually a part of the ecosystem, owning stuff, building assets that are able to now empower people, provide jobs, create the next superstars. That's what's next. Because we've kind of like, we've done that, okay, we need to enter, so we need to be, or, like, obviously, at the end of the day, like, all these things need to be done to get to certain levels, but it's at the point where you can be an independent, because at the end of the day, like, bro, there's so many successful independent artists in America. Like, obviously, being an international artist trying to break it is harder. And that's where partnerships come in. Like, there's certain deals I've heard about where I'm just like, wow, why didn't I think of this?
So if you're an artist now, right, and, you know, you want to go into the music business and all of that, what would you say, like, the biggest sort of, like, income stream is? Like, would it be from streaming? Would it be from touring? Would it be from brand partnerships?
In the beginning, it would be streams. Streaming money isn't crazy money, but in the beginning it would be streams, because, and this is me like talking about like a Nigerian artist, like streams, the streaming payouts and streaming rates for like music from like when it's being streamed on like Nigeria and Ghana isn't amazing. But it would probably be like your first like steady income. And then you can now grow into like shows, touring, before you now get into that level of brand partnerships. But there are cases where they're like brand new artists that their brand is just, it's just not even so big, but it's so like brand friendly that you don't necessarily even need to have like 10 hot songs. people just need to just see you like once or twice looking a certain way in a video, strong social media, and you can be good. There are people like that that they don't do that much stuff. Like, look at like Janelle Monáe and Jidenna and all these guys. They're brand deal, but like they have a little niche thing and it works for them. And we have artists like that in Nigeria. Like, I always use Show Dem Camp as an example for this. Show Dem Camp have found what works for them, and they focus on this, and they are growing that market. There's no point, because I don't know, I always say this thing to people, I'm like, why should Terry, there's a concert going on, why should Terry G and Timi Dakolo be backstage dragging to be on that show? Like, what kind of show is it? Like, obviously, there will be shows where everybody, but I'm like, in the grand scheme of things, you're having, okay, let's say we're having a gospel show today. Why is Terry G backstage? Or why is Dubanj backstage? You get what I mean? Like, this obviously is Timi Dakolo's thing. It's the same way.
Let's focus on that.
Yeah. Like everyone knowing, like, because another thing is, and it's like brand identity, a lot of artists come in and they don't know who they're trying to sell their music to.
But you know that I think that is quite complicated. Yeah. Let me speak for Nigeria, right? Especially with regards to like that whole brand thing and monetization thing.
Nigeria is all over the place.
Because the thing is, it's one thing for you to know who you are and what you're trying to, the audience you're trying to like curate and all of that. Yeah. But I find that brands, when you are talking to them, if they have a specific idea.
Oh no, Nigerian brand, Nigerian marketing managers, as in.
They don't want to hear anything else. So I can see when, if you want to eat.
Yeah, of course.
As an artist.
Which is, I agree, but then at the same time, like people will look at it and be like, oh, it's easy for you to say that now. But I'm like, dude, there are times when we've worked with brands and I'm just like, why the hell did we do this deal? Or why the hell is this person, how does this person even think this is going to work? But then it's like, it's a check. Let's keep it moving. But at the end of the day, I feel as if people are starting to understand more, because you just can't call out people on this on your show. but then there's so many
brands
where it's like, why are you sponsoring this when you could be doing this? Or like, why is this person your brand ambassador when this person is clearly a better fit? But then that person is your brand ambassador because, he had the biggest song in Nigeria this year, but bro, it's not even convincing.
It doesn't even like align. Like, the values are not aligned.
It's so funny. Like, there are times when I've tried to convince banks to do financial literacy things. Like, to say, listen, we're packaging entertainment with financial literacy content. This is literally your core thing, and it is going to work.
What the bank will tell you? Bank will tell you, oh, sorry, we don't have a budget for this. But 3 months down the line, that bank will sponsor the video, the show, Whiskey show, Bonner Boy show, and they care about the 10 tables in the front so they can give their staff and friends. Like, it just doesn't make...
Meanwhile, I'm trying to say, like, I'm creating a vehicle for your products to be discussed in a real way.
Yeah.
Because there are solutions to actual pain points that, you know...
The services you offer and things,
like,
yeah.
But they don't get it. Like, it's so...
A lot of them get it, but they just want to chop life. Mm-hmm. That's really what it is.
But then I try not to take it personally. Yeah. I keep thinking that at the end of the day, it is, if I say it like this and you don't understand, I'll say it in another way until you understand, as in until I get to the person.
No, trust me.
Going to like figure
And a perfect example of that is Mattel. Mm. I know how many alcohol brands approached me like, oh, I want something. And I was just like, it's not going to work. Because things like.
Mattel is amazing because they are my partners on Smart Money Woman, as in they're one of our biggest, like, sponsors. And luckily, sometimes you get people who actually understand,
I feel like they looked and were like, let's look at all the mistakes all these other alcohol companies have made. Let's sit down with this guy and see if his stuff actually aligns. And it's a no brainer now. Like, that's the way it's meant to be done. Like, even like Puma, like what stuff we do with Puma. Like, I remember the first time I had a conversation with Puma. Puma, like, why do we need a Nigerian brand ambassador? And I was like, you know what? Let me prove to you. And we used the Puma jerseys in the CK and David video, Lala. And one of those kind of like drop mic moments, I was like, you know what? Give me the jerseys. And the amount of inquiries they got about the jerseys in the video, they're like, okay, let's talk.
I love that. Yeah. As in, so it's almost like, yes, I may be this big talent manager and I have this. Big talent that I manage or whatever, but I still am willing to prove myself, and prove what I'm selling.
I know I'm a very proud person, but I try to steer my pride into ways that is beneficial. Mm. So I was like, okay, you think we can't help your brand? I'll be like, bring the jerseys.
Let me show you.
Yeah. And Ikuku saved me money because I didn't have to now go and buy jerseys. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, you see, if you had listened to me, these jerseys would have been available for sale the day this video came out and we would have made money together.
How do you decide which brands that you want to work with or how you work with a brand, like in terms of how lucrative it has to be?
I've learned that the hard way. So one thing, and I'll use David as a case study. The brand partnerships David has had the most success with are the ones he actually likes.
Mm.
If you look through like a history of brands he's worked with and stuff, you will know the ones that were genuinely he had interest in or he actually uses or does stuff for them. And I think that's just the best way to go with brands. Like when it's, you know how they say, do what you love and you never have to work a day in your life. It's the same thing. Calling them the day for them is kind of a job.
With the whole Davido alert moment, like when he said everyone should send, if you're my friend, send me money to this, you know, account or whatever. And I think it was a minimum of 1 million. And it was such an organic viral moment.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking, I feel like a check must have been exchanged here, either before or after, because it was such an amazing moment for Alat.
Let me tell you the truth.
Please.
And it's like honest truth. So we have an account officer that has been an account officer for over, I think he opened me and David's first GTB accounts. His name is Muiwa. He's been my account officer since I registered my first business for years. And I go where Muiwa goes.
Mm.
So pretty much, we had accounts with GTB while Muiwa was the GTB. Muiwa moves to, maybe after this, we'll start pitching from other banks. Muiwa moves to Wema.
Yeah.
And we were using Wema Bank. So David had a conversation with us. He was like, it's my birthday, this is what I want. And I was like, okay, cool. We'll get it for him. No problem. All boys come together. Next thing, David just goes and posts, like, yo, if you're my guy, send me back to this and post it. I'll never forget, I think I went to go have, we're all in his room. We left, I think it was him and Lati, and he told Lati he did it. I think I was in the shower, and I have David's social media on my phone. So I was in the shower, because I always play music when I'm in the shower. So imagine like you playing music and just like, ding, 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 ding. I was like, what was this? So I came out, I just looked at my phone, and I was like, David. Before I know, I go and say, so David's like, guy, let me show you something. And shows me how much money is in that. This is like 3 hours. I'm like, guy.
Wow.
I just go back to what I was saying. I was like, dude, you're crazy. But at that point, there was no discussion with Wema, nothing. But it just became so big. Like 2 days later, me, Wan, and the rest of the team were in Dubai in the hotel room. And we're like, listen, we can't live here without formalizing a deal. That we have to do this. And since then, like, Wema has farm now, so.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So you are able to even take organic moments and then create what other people are you seeing as, oh, they're just catching trips. You turn it into money.
I've done it a few times. Some of them I can't tell you, but it's part of the business.
I love it. Yeah. Manage me. Okay, so I wanted to just switch now to a few personal finance questions for you personally. So do you have like an investment strategy? Because obviously you make all this money now, like with building all these businesses and, you know, having all of this global success. Yeah. Obviously, I'm sure that you're thinking about a legacy and, you know, all of that. So what is your investment strategy, your personal investment strategy?
So I have a friend who's actually like, he's a money guy. So up until like 2-3 years, I had a system that was working for me. And we had a convo, what were we now in June, yeah? Even like November last year, and he was like, this is what I think you should be doing. And so basically at the moment, I'm building stuff the way he did. Like obviously I have investments already, like I've invested in property. I've built, I have three businesses. What's the word to use again for this? But now I'm now basically like investing my money, trying to meet certain goals and do certain things with certain timelines. Because I always say to my friends, I'm like, this money we've been making, baba, every day I'm sending money into this investment. I'm like, guy, when am I going to enjoy my money? But at the end of the day, when you look at say, and the money has worked for you here and in different ways, you've tripled your money sometimes. Like for example, property, it was actually Nito that put me on property game. And it's one of the it's probably the best Nito has done for me. Like investing in property. But then at the end of the day, like property is just one aspect of it. Like stocks, bonds, growing your businesses,
Because we're young, like, yeah. And the thing is that right now you don't have any responsibility.
Ha!
I mean, you don't have any responsibilities from the point of view of, you don't have a wife and children. You're not.
I have many children.
You know, like, those things, like, because, do you know something? I feel like, yes, obviously, as a man, I can imagine how many kind of responsibilities.
I have responsibilities. Die. Like, let me say like this. If I don't make money in 1 month, any people will be sad. please. I have plenty of responsibilities.
So basically, my point is, you have more disposable income to.
I don't. Let's fix that. I don't. But,
okay.
But yeah, obviously, I get what you mean. Yes, at this point in time, like, I have less responsibilities. Yes. So,
and it's probably going to get worse if you think you have a lot of responsibilities.
No, I know.
It's going to yeah. Increase. Yeah.
I know. So, I have this formula of how I break down my money. Like, a certain amount of money goes into one account, and then my money goes to another account, and another account. So, like, I have, like, a day-to-day.
So, basically, if you set goals, so this yeah. account is for lifestyle, this account is
lifestyle.
For...
I don't have an account for lifestyle.
A house that I'm building.
There are things like that. So, yeah. I have an account where, like, there's literally probably been, like, 2 or 3 debits ever.
Mm-hmm.
I have an account in the middle that's, like, for paying for houses or, like... Mm-hmm. So, for example, we're talking about me and my friends are currently, like, building, like, a little beach resort, like, a group of us. So, like, money's going into that. Obviously, we own, me and another group of my friends, we own a nightclub together. Money goes in and out from that. Personal needs, personal things I'm doing.
Goes from another account.
I have children I'm taking care of. Goes from that. Things like that. Just like, I feel like self-assessment and like checking. Like, if you check my notes on my phone, I'm always like, okay. I paid this now. What's left with this? I need to do this. When will I completely own this? After that, what am I doing next? Stuff like that.
But you're always focused on
making sure that the bag is growing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So if you had $1 million now, this is my favorite example. $1 million, 100 million. I like hundreds. I like millions. Like, if how would you spend it? Like, how would you splurge and how would you invest?
So I'll probably pledge like 15% of it max.
Okay.
And then definitely a holiday people I care about. Like, I'm big on memories and experiences. So I probably won't be like the kind of guy that like, yeah, I buy all the boys' watches. That's not me.
That's
what yeah.
David.
Yeah. I'll probably be the kind of person be like, yo guys, let's go to Ibiza for a week, everything on me. That's kind of stuff I would do. Mm. Depending on when I get this $1 million, hopefully let's hope that by that time I've already reached like my property goals. So maybe I'll put the money into a business. I don't know, like put some into stock or bonds. I've never been lucky with like crypto and all this shit, so I'm not interested.
I feel like you'd probably take the biggest risks in the things that you can control. Like the things that you understand, like so in building businesses, in
the things that like everything that I'm putting money into now, like in the grand scheme of like where the most money is going to, the ones that I know that if anything goes wrong is on me. Not that I'll go and stand with somebody and say, why did this thing feel like I don't like those kind of things. I like to be held accountable for my own shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. And my own stuff.
Don't worry, I haven't decided whether I want to be swearing on the show yet or not. Like so. Don't worry, we'll just edit it out if it doesn't work.
So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, it will definitely be broken down, like, and it will all depend on like where I'm at in my life, but definitely a huge chunk of it will go into different kinds of investments.
3 tips that you would give an up-and-coming Issa Asika. So if you had to give advice to Issa, you know, 15 years ago, and these are 3 things you should do.
Definitely learn to be like more financially responsible earlier on, like understand the value of money, like bookkeeping, records, how to save money, how to like reduce costs and stuff. Definitely that'll be number one. Number two would be like staying focused, keeping your head in the game, not getting carried away. And the third one, I'll just be like, take time out to rest, because I learned that the hard way. Take time out to rest, like balance is key.
Thank you so much, Issa. This has been so informative. I had a good time and I feel like I've learned like a little bit more like about your journey and like the music business, and hopefully the audience has too.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Yay.